Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
And good morning. I'm Phil Vacchio.
And this is the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Show, where we talk about estate planning, wills, and trusts, and we answer your questions. This is a call-in show. You can give us a call at 518-476-5900. We haven't had calls in a while, have we?
And I'm looking right at the phone.
A few weeks
okay.
ago.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But welcome a call.
Yes. Yeah, please. It's been a while since you and I have been on together, Jean Marie.
It has been. That's right.
Yeah.
How are things for you? Quieter?
Quieter?
No way.
Busy, always.
Yeah.
Those days are over. I found once you have kids, there's no more quiet days, right?
No, there aren't. That's right. Sadly, I can say there.
Gotta wait till you're a grandparent like me. There's nothing finer.
That's what I hear. That's what I hear.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. You'll get there.
One day.
You can have fun and then you can give the kids back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So you was complaining about not finding the ice scraper this morning, Jane Marie? Cold for your taste?
Oh, it was cold.
I am not ready for this. I didn't start my car. I didn't have the ice scraper. The windshield was covered in ice.
It always feels like it comes out of nowhere for me, especially up here, because I'm downstate. It's a little bit longer till it gets cold.
Right.
So I'm like, why is it so cold in the morning already? Mm-hmm. Oh.
I should know better, but I'm just eternally hopeful for warm weather.
Yeah, you're just holding out for the, mm-hmm. Well, never happen. I haven't even done up my last full leaf cleanup, John. Still waiting. It's all right.
You do that by hand? Leaf cleanup is tough.
You got the mower and the leaf blower, right. But it's okay. Still, you know, I put it off too long.
I put it off too long. It's tedious, yes.
It is. So how was your week at work, Jane Marie?
Busy, as always.
Busy.
That's right. I say people aren't getting any younger.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's true.
Okay.
There's more and more people to take care of, right?
So I have a question for you. When, the practice of this area of law, mm-hmm. do you prefer helping people plan proactively or reactively?
Proactively, of course.
Yeah, so the consults are quite different, right? When we're doing the consultation for someone who's planning ahead of time versus someone who's having some kind of issue and coming to us.
That's right.
And usually there are a lot more pleasant consults when we're planning ahead of time. Sometimes we have to tell people mm-hmm. things that they don't want to hear if it's retroactively.
That's right. Proactively, you can... Yeah, there's time. You're not in a crunch, you know.
Yeah, there's time. You know, we bring... You know, during the consults, we bring up a lot of things that are negative and morbid, but it's more, in hypothetical scenarios. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I tell the client we're going to go down this deep rabbit hole together. And, you know, I apologize in advance, but this is all practical things to think about. And
yeah, it's going to be unpleasant for a little bit, but then we'll be done with it.
And you can laugh about it. You can make jokes in that mm-hmm. scenario. But when it's reactive, it's a little bit different.
That is definitely different. That means things have happened and we're trying to sort it out and, clean up a mess sometimes.
So I had a file recently, mm-hmm. I bring this up, where it was a referral from a real estate agent.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I used to actually go around to realtor offices and do some presentations about like what to look for with deeds and how they're owned and what the mm-hmm. probate process is like, because oftentimes when someone passes away, if it's not recognized early or if a property is like owned by a trust and it's not done in a certain way early, mm-hmm. it can disrupt the sale process, delay the closing and whatnot. Right. Mm-hmm. So this realtor recognized that and referred mm-hmm. a client to me. And they said, hey, you know, I have this client. They have a little bit of an interesting situation with the ownership on their deed, and they're getting ready to sell their house. I just want you to take a look at it, you know, which is a great time to take a look at it because it's not
getting ready
in the middle of a sale and whatnot. They're preparing. So they're doing the right thing. And, you know, say, I hope it's an easy thing, but take a look first. I'm just being, you know, proactive here. I said, this is great. So she sends over the deed to me and I look at it. And there's four people on the deed, right?
Okay.
So I'm going to walk you through it. And, you know, mm-hmm. it took me a little while to figure out myself. So we have a husband and wife. They own the deed. And then it's that husband's and wife's son and his wife.
Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. So four people.
So four people. Two married couples.
Correct. Right. Two married couples.
Mm-hmm.
So the parents, on the deed, it says the parents' names. And then it says as husband and wife.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says the next couple's name.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's husband and wife.
Right.
But then after that, it says each a 50% as tenants in common.
Right.
All right. So we start there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then she tells me, I forgot to mention, the son. So mm-hmm. there's only one person out of those four people still alive.
Oh, boy. Okay.
So far you follow me, right?
Yep, so far.
So only one alive still. And he's like, well, you know, I'm the last man standing.
So he thinks
so
he
obviously
owns it all, right?
It's mine and I can just mm-hmm. sell it and it's easy because I have death certificates. Everyone else is deceased. And I said, well, hold on a second.
Yeah. However.
Yeah, let's unpack this a little bit. So the first hurdle mm-hmm. is that tenants in common designation. Explain mm-hmm. to the audience what, mm-hmm. what that means mm-hmm. and how it applies here.
Yeah, so tenants in common is where each of you own your one half separately. So there's no, normally when you're all on a deed together, you think, you know, if someone dies, it goes to the other people named on the deed. That's only if it says joints with rights of survivorship. It has to say that. And if it says tenants in common, the first couple owns their half and the second couple owns their half. And they each have to do something like a will or a trust to decide who gets their half when they die.
Right. So the joint tenants of rights of survivorship or the husband and wife or spouse mm-hmm. and spouse.
Right.
Is the same idea, where if one passes away, the other one just automatically becomes the owner of their shares.
Right.
But so here, because the parent's share was tenants in common with the son and his wife's share.
Right.
That half didn't automatically come to the son. So we started there with the conversation because they actually ended up coming in my email back. I said, you know, it's more complicated. They got to come in and see
right.
me. So we're sitting there. I said, all right, so first, between mom and dad, you know, mom passed away first. Dad got her half, I mean, her share.
Right.
But then when dad passed away, you didn't automatically get dad. So let's start there. We're going to have to likely probate.
Yeah, look at dad's will.
Estate. You know, dad had a will, left it to him. Mm-hmm. All well and good, but this guy wasn't anticipating going through, you know, a legal court proceeding
right.
probate.
That's right.
We
right.
talked about that all the time and how it can mm-hmm. take a year or
now
more.
We're stuck with probate, right?
Yep.
But John.
Wow.
But John.
Yeah.
It gets worse. Okay?
Oh, it's not.
Oh, there's
I'm not done here.
Oh, that sounded bad right. enough that we have to do a probate.
Yeah. Right. So he's sitting there with his wife, but I come to learn it's his new wife.
Oh,
it's not the wife that's on the
she's
deed.
She's not on that deed.
So. I said, oh, no, that's not. This is not the person here today. That's my ex-wife. I said, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And she's dead.
Oh,
Okay. And the deed mm-hmm. said as husband and wife.
Did they get divorced before she died?
They got divorced before she died.
Mm-hmm.
And
he had some paperwork he should have done.
That yeah. Oh, yeah. So
yay, John knows.
John knows the deal here. So that the divorce from her
right.
severed their
yes.
joint tenants of rights of survivorship. So her estate
owns
was actually an owner of 25%.
Oh my gosh, he was probably not happy to hear that.
He did not want to hear that. He said, what do you mean? What does that mean, Phil?
Did he say it in that accent?
Yes.
He did.
What does that mean, Phil? Angry. So this is what I'm saying. When we're reactive.
Angry and scared.
It doesn't always go as pleasant as being proactive here. So now he's all upset. Well,
yes.
They both are because they want to sell their house and move.
Now, is he living in the house? Do you know?
They're living in the house still.
Okay.
They're getting
right. So they're using it.
They're gearing up to move. But,
right.
you know, this is putting, you know, a wrench in their plans of,
right.
of moving on to whatever their next stage of life is.
Wow.
So we have to have that conversation because she was also remarried. The ex-wife who died. And,
oh, boy.
Okay. They did have a son together. So luckily, it sounds like they're going to cooperate. But,
right.
you know, now someone has to probate the deceased ex-wife's estate.
Right.
And get that share over to them.
Right.
And they have to probate the second of the parents to die's estate.
Right.
And it's a big old mess.
That's horrible. That's
it's a big old mess
so
that was really easy to avoid.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. The divorce proceeding even said the house went to him, but they never did a deed and all this mm-hmm. stuff. So it got really
right.
complicated. And then anyway, he wasn't very happy. He wasn't a happy camper.
That's right. And he was... But
So what happens now? I mean, where do you leave this thing?
We're going to have to probate
mm-hmm.
both of them.
Yeah.
It's going to take a while. Hopefully,
right.
you know, on the parent side of things, he was the only child. So probate's not going to be complicated.
Right.
There's no other people involved.
Mm-hmm.
But on the ex-wife, there's a new husband.
Yeah.
There's the joint son together. So,
right.
you know, I don't know exactly how that's going to go. They could potentially cause problems because they have to cooperate.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they'll say they cooperate until they think about it. And say,
yeah. Like, what can I get out of this?
Oh,
you change your heart.
Here's some money I didn't expect to get.
So we're at the early stages here in that one, but we shall see.
Yeah. So that's wow.
I think that's just a warning that if you get divorced, review all your documents.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Because I had a situation. It wasn't quite as bad as that, but the married couple came in and the husband owned a property with his ex-wife. They had gotten divorced, I don't know, something like 10, 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It said that he got the house, but they never did the deed.
Yeah, some people, you know, you see the divorce decree and the judicial settlement. It's a court order and everything. It's all signed. And people might think, oh, I got the house. And, you know, honestly, if they're represented by an attorney in divorce proceeding, that attorney should be saying, we got
to
finalize this by actually transferring the property. We have to do a new deed.
That's right.
So sometimes that doesn't happen, obviously, and that's where problems become. Mm-hmm. And it's also the idea of, I mean, like, you know, having four owners on a deed, is that always a good idea? Aren't there there better ways sometimes? Because when something happens to those people, you better make sure that you're keeping up and saying, I have to change the deed.
Right.
Yeah, if something happens, if somebody dies, one of those people on the, I mean, you should always immediately react to that.
Yeah, at least have a conversation with an attorney like us.
This guy, so.
Yeah, go back to your attorney, look over your documents. So death or divorce.
I wouldn't have known that if I hadn't talked to you guys.
Yeah.
That's right.
And sometimes it's a situation where we see the client and we're like, oh, no, it was done in a way that, you know, we're fine.
Yes.
You know, say on that deed, all four of them owned it as joint tenants' rights of survivorship, and he hadn't gotten divorced, and he was the last man standing. It would have been a different scenario. It would have automatically been his.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, listen, there's probably better ways to. I think it was a family property, so like his parents were giving it to him, but wanted to stay on the deed in a sense.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But at a certain point, they should have came off, and you know, it's easy to set things up and just let it go and not circle back around and you know, look at it again. We see that too often.
Yeah, right. No, that's a mess. Hard to clean up afterwards.
Yeah. And it also means that it's not, you know, a deed, the joint ownership is a way without doing trust and whatnot to avoid probate sometimes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Financial accounts, a little bit different. We can have beneficiary designations on those.
That's right.
And the beneficiary designations also avoid probate. So things like your regular bank accounts or your life insurance policies or IRAs or whatever kind of financial account you have, for the most part, you can have a beneficiary on it of some kind.
Right.
But that doesn't allow us to get creative, I would say.
It doesn't allow us to get creative. It also doesn't allow you flexibility in like what happens if something happens to that first person, right?
Yeah.
If they die or if something happens to them. So you're a little bit limited with your beneficiary designation.
Yeah. And sometimes it's like in some financial accounts, you can name contingent and even tertiary beneficiaries, so like a couple backups. But on certain accounts, like, for example, regular bank accounts, so checking and a savings account, no banks that I know allow for that.
Right.
They'll allow for things like what we call payable on death or transfer on death designations.
That's right.
But it's a one level thing, right? If I have my wife and I own this account and I have my son, it's payable on death to my son or my two kids. That's as creative I can get. If those kids predecease me, I don't have the option to name backups. I have to make sure that if that happens, I go back in.
Right.
Right. And update it.
And that's not a good planning tool, right? You're not going to always, as we see, not remember to go in and
There's nowhere to future-proof it, right?
Yeah,
a lot of times we're having the conversations about how do we future-proof these documents? How do we account for as many things as we can account for?
Right.
And in that realm, that's not a way to do that. It doesn't allow us to get that creative. So I think when we come back from the break, I kind of want to get into creative lawyering and what we can do versus just the simple beneficiary designations to kind of account for things like that.
Yeah, there's a lot you can do with trusts for beneficiaries.
Yeah.
Trusts. Right. And we'll be right back after this break.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, Saratoga Springs, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Phil, please call us during normal business hours Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us in Albany or Saratoga offices, place? Call 518-465-7581 or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back. I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
And I'm Phil Vacchio.
And this is the second half of the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Show. We're still here for questions. If you just enjoy listening to us, that's fine as well. But if you want to call in, it's 518-476-5900.
You know, Jane Marie, I had a client recently that's a listener, and she said one of the reasons she came to us is because on the radio we have kind voices.
Oh, that's sweet.
It's a compliment, right?
Yeah,
that is sweet. She sounds so kind and inviting on the radio. I decided to come in. I was like, oh, that's,
there you go. See?
That's good. That's what we're going for.
That's good.
Nice.
Yeah, we have fun. We're not too formal.
Mm-hmm. No, we try not to be. We try to explain things in a way that are easily approachable.
Right? Yes.
Kind of the idea.
You do.
Good.
So before the break, we were talking about beneficiary designations on different kind of accounts and how generally speaking, it's a great way to plan. Like all the time I'm telling my clients, for the most part, make sure there's beneficiaries and everything.
That's
so,
an easy way to avoid probate.
Super easy. And if you're a married person, if it's you and a spouse and you want everything to go to your spouse, it's a no-brainer. Anything that's not, if it's jointly owned, that's already good. If one of you die, the other one stays the owner. If it's a solo-owned account like an IRA or you have, you know, like Jane Marie's shoe account, right? You have your special shoe account.
I do, of course. Yes, that's right.
Just to make sure Michael is a beneficiary. If you just want to add him as a joint owner, he has to be a beneficiary on that.
Maybe I could make my kids a beneficiary.
Whatever you want.
And then they won't tell Dad. That's great.
keep the secret, kids.
Yeah, keep
it going. But so for the most part, you're going to want to have beneficiaries and everything. Not the case 100% across the board. If we want strings attached to someone's inheritance, we don't want straight beneficiaries for the most part because we normally can't attach strings.
Yes, that's correct.
When I say that, it means we can't make rules about other than it just directly goes to them. Sometimes some financial institutions with retirement accounts or some investment accounts, I've seen it where they can hold it back for a little bit. The longest I've seen is till 21.
Right.
Somewhat like a custodial account where they don't get it until they're a certain age. But even that's not very creative.
There's not
limited
very
options.
Specific rules about that.
Yeah. So how can we get the combination of both avoiding probate? So when I die, my assets don't have to go through a court proceeding, but attach rules to those at the same time, you know, for whatever those rules are. How do I do that? Is there a way?
Yeah, and that's where trusts come in, and trusts are really flexible. So having trust avoids probate, and then it lets you put in as many different restrictions or rules as you want for the beneficiaries.
Yeah, so we call those in the field testamentary trusts.
That's right.
And people get really confused because I'm like, she's like, what do you mean? I said, well, it's a trust within a trust.
Oh, yes. People,
like those Russian dolls, and you keep taking them out. There's another trust.
That's a good example, yeah.
But so the testamentary trust is, it's I'm creating a trust when I die if certain conditions apply, whether it's through a will or through other living trusts that I created while I was alive. Mm-hmm. And it really is just a set of rules that my trustee or my executor is ordered to follow.
Right.
So instead of going to these people or this person outright, it has to be distributed in a certain way. The most common version of that is minor kids.
So absolutely.
Say a client comes to you, Jane Marie, and they're a young couple, whether it's they're doing some kind of trust or it's just in their will, and they say, you know, I have kids who are young.
Right.
You know, what are we advising them to do rather than leaving it outright to their kids?
Yeah, frequent conversation. If you don't do anything by law, they could get that money at 18.
Right.
Right. So frequently we're saying, okay, let's put it in a trust. You know, you pick the ages. You know, we can recommend, I think, half at 25, half at 30 is something that I recommend to clients.
Yep.
But something where they're not going to get the money directly until they're at those ages, but the trustee can still use the money for them, you know, before they get to that age.
Well, because that's what, whenever I start that conversation, I get, but what if they're 21 and they have school expenses or this or that? Mm-hmm. And they say that. What do you say to them?
Yeah, the trustee can pay for that.
Yeah. So it's not that the money's locked up completely until they reach those ages in this example.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's just when those kids will get full control.
Right.
We can still give the trustee certain authority to make distributions mm-hmm. beyond that and earlier than that for reasons, you know, we call them generally the HEMS rules, right? So the health, education, maintenance, or support, so pretty broad scope of things, but we're trusting someone else who's older and more mature to have better discretion about those distributions. So if, you know, little Johnny comes to you and says, hey, I'm going to buy a Lamborghini, give me my money.
Hopefully
that trustee's saying no. But if he needs it for school or, you know, needs a more reasonable vehicle to get here and there or to work, they will say yes, most likely.
I say that's them, you know, the trustee is kind of replacing you in terms of how to give money to the kids.
Yeah.
So you're picking someone who would think like you and make the same decisions. And, you know, they can pay for college. You know, they could pay for a reasonable car. They could pay for rent while they're in college.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever they need to help them out. And sometimes they say, well, what if my kids, you know, your kids are really young. You don't know how they're going to be at 21 or 25.
Yeah, I can hope and pray,
hope,
but I don't know yet.
So that also gives the trustee, like, they could have an option of keeping it to their 30, but if you have a really mature 22-year-old, they could give them some money early on.
Yeah, I mean, they could technically even give the entire thing earlier if they feel that they've fully matured or the money's running low and just distribute the rest of it, so...
Yeah, it's a wait-and-see approach. Let them decide later on, you know, when they see how things are.
So that concept is an example of a testamentary trust we were talking about. So if when I die, you know, say we did what you said, and it's 25 and 30.
Right.
When I die, if there are kids who are inheriting that are under 30, the ultimate age, that trust is going to get formed for them.
Mm-hmm.
If when I die, all my kids are over that age.
Right, no
that,
trust.
Yeah, that trust never gets formed. It becomes a moot point. So that's a common, you know, more rudimentary version of a testamentary trust. But sometimes we have clients that want to get very creative. And this is when we as attorneys get to really stress our brains. Because they're usually going to us for advice. They're going to tell us the story and kind of what the issues are with these people they're leaving money to and kind of what their ideas are.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any good examples of some crazy ones that you've dealt with or some more complex ones?
I mean, many of them, but the one that came to mind is the parents thought that it was one child, a son, who was kind of not working and the parents were supporting him. And they were afraid when they died and left him the money, he would just, you know, be a trust fund baby, live off the money and not work. So they came up with this idea to encourage him to work. That the trustee could give him money that matched what he earned, which was interesting. So that gave him an incentive. If I go out and get a job that pays me $50,000 a year, I'm going to get another $50 from the trust, right? If I don't go out and work, I'm not getting anything from the trust.
That's a good idea.
Right.
So you better find a job.
Find a job. That's right.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Did they come up with this concept or was it a collaborative effort with you?
Collaborative. Yes. Yeah. These are a certain type of trust. Okay. But they liked that idea and we worked on it. And, you know, we modified that there'd be certain times when the trustee could pay for things, even if he's not working. Like, we don't want him, you know, not to have money at all. And so... medical emergencies or things like that or buying a house, you know, things like that.
Pretty cool idea, though.
Yeah, that's a creative one. Do you recall in that example who they appointed as trustee?
I don't recall who they appointed as trustee. I would imagine it was one of their brothers or sisters, you know, someone of that age group. Right.
That's when it gets complicated sometimes. Like when I had this week, similar in theory, where one of the kids was late to bloom.
Kind
of taking his time to get to where they want him to be in terms of maturity and whatnot. And they're still hopeful he's going to get there, but he's simply not there and they don't know if he will.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I'll even steal your idea, but because we're going back and forth with some ideas. But one of the questions became, there's two kids. They were like, I don't want to make my other son the trustee because it could create conflict. This other son might get very angry and say, I want my money and harass his brother. Which is a good point.
That is. I've come across that a lot. Yeah. Picking the trustee is just as important as setting the terms of the trust. Right.
Yeah. Because say we gave broad discretion to the trustee to make distributions beyond that, that brother could be like, you know what? Forget it. I want nothing to do with this. Here's all your money. Go away.
Mm-hmm.
And that might not have been the parent's intent. And then the whole thing falls apart. Sometimes if there's nobody, like in this case, there's no one else.
Okay.
So we might actually do a corporate Sure. Trustee.
Right. The corporate trustee is always a last resort, but it works, you know.
Yeah. I mean, if there's no one else, there's no individuals that you trust or, you know, in this case, anyone they would trust is much older, so it's not right. really feasible. Mm-hmm. There's some entities out there, different financial institutions that have trustee departments mm-hmm. that you can appoint that institution as the trustee and they'll manage it. And there's pluses and minuses to that, right? Right. So there's going to be additional expenses, obviously, which is a negative right. mm-hmm. for the administration of that trust. And they're an unbiased
yes.
party. Mm-hmm. So you could look at that as a good thing or a bad thing, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Good in that world of harassment. They're not going to care if this
right.
son calls and
10 times.
Tries to harass them.
Right.
Whatever. We don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Bad in the sense of they have no personal connection to that person.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like, you know, there's no... I would say empathy there, if you will.
Right, that's right.
So it could be more of a sterile relationship, or it could be harder to get money for legitimate means right. sometimes.
But it's sometimes you have to do that. So even when I'm having them appoint a trustee who's their age, right?
Yeah.
So like if he was appointing his brother, for example, we have to have a backup trustee,
yep.
right? So, you know, you could bring in the corporate trustee then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it could also be as that backup if the brother doesn't want to do it because he's being harassed, he can mm-hmm. resign, right?
He could resign and then the corporate trustee yeah. could take over. Yeah, that's right.
So we'll do that from time to time too, but that's, you know, part of the consideration. We get all kind of crazy requests from clients in that world, I think, sometimes. Mm-hmm. And sometimes legitimate, right? So we'll have situations such as, mm-hmm. you know, sad things like I have a child who's a drug addict.
Yes.
It's very right. sad. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to enable their issues, but we still want to leave them money.
Right. So having a trust for that is really important.
Really important. Yes. Things like that. Gambling addictions.
Right.
Sometimes they're temporary things like, oh, my daughter's going through a divorce right now and mm-hmm. I'm scared if I die and I leave her money and this and that.
I would say the most frequent one I get is whether they're going through a divorce or not. I don't want anything to go to her husband.
They always say that, right? And that, fair enough. I mean,
all the time.
Even if you love your in-laws, usually, yes. you know, you don't know if your child passes away and that person mm-hmm. gets remarried, all of a sudden your money's going to a whole nother family. So
right.
reasonable, even if you very, very much love mm-hmm. the in-laws, usually we keep right. it in the family.
Yeah, and sometimes the only way to really do that is to leave it to that child in trust.
Yeah.
And then it goes to the grandchildren so
right.
that the spouse has no access to or rights to those funds.
Yeah, it's a happy medium where, it, you know, the funds can still be used for that person, but
right.
they don't get to direct where it goes eventually when they pass away or whatever the rules say. So it's fun. What you can't do with that, you can't create rules that are against public policy, right? So the law
interesting.
Doesn't right. like people trying to fully control someone else's life.
Mm-hmm.
Things like, you know, I don't know, religious decisions or...
Oh, right. Like who you marry.
Or, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. things like that. The law says those are against public policy. So we get those sometimes. Like, you know, my daughter only gets the money if she doesn't marry that guy, Joe. I don't like that guy, Joe.
That's right.
Like, she can't get the money unless she breaks up with him.
you can't say that, right.
Yeah. So there's certain things that we can't do and... Sometimes clients don't want to hear that.
Right.
I tell them, well, we put it in there, but it's not legally enforceable.
It's not going to be enforceable. That's right. But usually there's a compromise you can do.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot that we can do with trust and get the best of both worlds of avoiding probate, but at the same time having those rules attached, mm-hmm. whether it's as simple as, you know, minor children are involved. We don't want them getting mm-hmm. the money at age 18.
Mm-hmm.
If you make your kids... direct beneficiaries of accounts, guess what? They're going to get it.
They get it
full control
at 18.
So have a great weekend, everyone.
Yep, have a great weekend. Stay warm.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you would like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581 or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.